you know, Netanyahu, I've had it with your game playing. I've had it with your pretending to comply with my concerns. This is it. You know, you've got to really stop bombing civilians. You've got to open up the gates and allow food in. And if that doesn't start today, the arms sales end tomorrow.
This is Afua Cooper, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
All right. Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
CKUT.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show.
You are listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT. My name is Candace, and I'm your host for today's show. Today's episode features a panel discussion from the Asian Prisoner Support Committee and 18 Million Rising about their present campaign to demand a pardon for the APSC4. We will hear from the APSC4 members, Ki, Bun, Maria, and PJ. They are four staff members with the Asian Prisoner Support Committee, and all are at risk of deportation. In today's show, they talk about the work of the Asian Prisoner Support Committee, as well as their personal stories of incarceration and release. As people with precarious immigration status, they face what's called double punishment. So imprisonment, you know, they serve their sentence, and then immigration detention, which can result in deportation. According to Solidarity Across Borders and No One is Illegal Montreal, double punishment is the unjust policy used against non-citizens after already being punished by the criminal justice system. The policies surrounding double punishment are racist and create a two-tier justice system in which immigrants face far more disastrous consequences for committing crimes than citizens. In the cases of the APSC4, California State Department of Correction and Rehabilitation contacted ICE, or Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to attempt to deport the APSC4 instead of allowing them to stay in their communities with their families. The APSC4 and their supporters are asking to be pardoned by the state of California Governor Gavin Newsom. Ki, Bun, Maria, and PJ, who we will hear on today's program, are childhood survivors of violence and trauma. They've been subject to bullying, they've experienced poverty, war, and domestic violence, and then been pipelined into the criminal legal system. During their incarceration, they transformed their lives. They became community leaders, earned educational certificates, and started new support programs for others. Join me here on the Prison Radio Show to listen to their stories, hear about their work with the Asian Prisoner Support Committee. We'll also talk briefly at the end of the show about trauma, incarceration, and healing.
So I'm Leanne, digital organizer, 18 Million Rising. Today I'm calling in from Dakota Anishinaabe land, also known as Minneapolis, Minnesota. But because we're online and joining from different places, I just want to consider the legacy of colonization embedded within the technologies, structures, and ways of thinking we use every day. We are using equipment and high-speed internet not available in many Indigenous communities, Even the technologies that are central to much of our work leave significant carbon footprints, contributing to changing climates that disproportionately affect Indigenous peoples worldwide. We invite you to join us in acknowledging this, as well as our shared responsibility to make good of this time, and for each of us to consider our roles in decolonization and solidarity. And this was adapted from Digital Land Acknowledgement from Adrian Wong of The Spiderweb Show. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge the ongoing genocide of the Palestinian people. It is abhorrent that our government continues to ignore the majority call for a permanent ceasefire, an entry of humanitarian aid, and an end of occupation. Today, even as we share stories of incarceration and fighting deportation, we know that our struggles for liberation are connected. Thank you for taking the time to join us tonight and to support our campaign efforts to keep APSC 4 free. All right, and now I'm going to go ahead and pass this over to PJ for a quick introduction of the APSC 4 members.
Yep. So again, my name is PJ. I work with the Asian Prisoners Support Committee as a community advocate. I'm also formerly incarcerated and a community leader. And I want to just now say welcome to you all and also give my colleague an opportunity to also introduce himself. I'm going to start with Key.
Hi, everyone. My name is Key. I'm the Program Facility Manager at APSC. I'll pass on to Bun.
Hey, y'all. My name is Bun. I'm the Reentry Coordinator for Asian Prison Support Committee, and I'll pass it to Maria.
Hi. Good afternoon, everybody. My name's Maria, and I'm the Reentry Consultant for APSC. And thank you all for coming.
Please take care of yourselves. Our speakers are sharing heavy testimonies, which can be traumatizing or difficult. This event is organized by Asian Prisoner Support Committee and 18 Million Rising. 18 Million Rising is a national organization that grows Asian American political power online and offline towards grassroots abolitionist campaigns by connecting pop culture, media, political education, and social justice movements.
So our mission, APSC's mission, is to provide direct support to Asian Pacific Islander prisoner and to also raise awareness about the ever-growing number of API in prison, detained and deported. And a little background story about APSC. We came about as an all-volunteer program to support the San Quentin Three, who at the time was advocating for ethnic study. And in response to their advocacy and their effort, the prison administration put them in solitary confinement and transferred them to other prison. And so while they were in solitary confinement, the San Quentin Three reached out to community members on the street and also community leaders for support and activists and also college students from UC Davis. And when I say activists, I mean community leader like Yoru Kichiyama, who was a human rights activist, actually came to meet with them, supported them, write letters for them. And through their effort of community support, they were able to be released from solitary confinement and have now all been home. And since their release sometime ago, 2002, we went back to Eddie actually came back to San Quentin and continuous effort to work with community in there to start the ethnic study programs, which is now called Roots Program, which is the first of its kind in the state and actually in the country. Able to say, yeah. Since then, APSC has expanded from an all-volunteer community to now an organization that provides services to communities with 12 staff, and we offer in-prison programming through the Roots program, also through a correspondence program called the Lit Club, and also we provide reentry support to community coming home, and we also do anti-deportation and defenses and also advocacy work. Yes, and then with that, I also want to say, like, if you want to learn more about us, you can also, you know, visit us on our webpage and learn more about how our history, learn more about some of our work. And we'd love to connect with community and you can always find out more about us through that process. I'm going to pass this to my colleague Key to share a little bit about what the pardon is and why it's important to us.
Hey, everyone. This is Key. I just want to talk about what PG said. What is a pardon? A pardon is like receiving forgiveness for the crime or for the criminal conviction and the restoration of our rights. There are two types of pardons. There is a state pardon by the governor and a federal pardon by the president. But tonight we're going to be talking about the governor's pardon. Why is this important? It is the only avenue to protect our immigrant and refugee communities safe from deportation and unite with their families and children. It ends doubly, or we could call it double punishment. Many immigrants and refugee families fled their country for safety and a better life. Coming to the U.S. Wasn't the saving grace for some of the families. It also stopped the process of being sentenced twice for the same crime. Why APSC4? This is not just about APSC4, but this is about our community. Pardon APSC4 is pardon the community. It's a bigger picture of all of us in this fight. Pardon processes are not always so clear, easy, and smooth. It's a community effort. We, California, have fought for a better process on pardon, but we still got a long ways to go. We are the game changer for many other states to follow. Governor Newsom was great at the beginning, but that changed with political ambitions. Governors that was like trailblazer was like Jerry Brown. And the reason why he pardoned so many people, but he was also a great ending governor because he was making amends for some of the harms he caused in the very beginning. So under each governor, it's a different process, but they do have the power to keep us together. A pardon would definitely save our community. It would keep families together. Freedom, like, we don't have to, like, people that are facing deportation don't have to worry about walking out of the house and being picked up anymore. That is the fear. So it can also, like, the major part of pardon is it helps us end the cycle of trauma, which infects, you know, which harms our community. And with that's what a pardon is. So now we're going to jump into the stories of each one of APSC4. And I'm very fortunate to be the first one to share. I had a hard time doing this, but I'm going to jump right in, right? I came to this great country when I was 4 years old. Growing up, I never imagined, nor my family, that one day I would be incarcerated, especially at a young age. From my youngest memories, we have always struggled and dealt with so many barriers, such as racism, stereotype, prejudice, harm, and cultural shame. My parents separated when I was 7. I became a parent at 8 years old. I fought to be accepted and earn respect in my community. I joined a gang when I was 16 years old because I felt accepted and loved. I was incarcerated at 17 years old for the first time in my life. While I was incarcerated, I earned my college degree, the first in my family to do so. Became a certified rape crisis counselor, developed many self-help programs to help myself and others become different people, better human beings. And I also worked as a youth mentor for like 15 years because I believe that who better to learn from than youth, because youth are they got so much experience that a lot of adults don't even understand. Like when I was a kid, I never felt like nobody heard me, but these kids, so I felt like this is my opportunity to get back. And I also earned many marketable skills. When I was found suitable for parole, I knew that I wouldn't be united with my family and community. My criminal conviction stripped my legal permanent resident status. I thought permanent meant permanent, but apparently it wasn't. And because of the 1995 MOU between Vietnam and America, I was released from immigration after 5 cruel months of detention. Man, I thought prison was bad, but man, immigration is much worse. Since coming home in April of 2016, I immersed myself in making amends for the harm that I caused to my community by serving as the reentry navigator for APSC. I need y'all support to keep me together with my only remaining elderly grandma and mother. I'm the first grandson and the oldest of 6 siblings. I want to continue serving my community and giving bicycle away to kids, elders, and mentoring you and most of all, helping impacted families and individuals with their reentry. Thank you.
That was Ki from the Asian Prisoner Support Committee. You are still listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. It's currently 6:15. We're now going to hear from two other members of the APSC4. We're going to hear from Bun and Maria. Maria in particular talks about having to wear an ankle monitor.
Hey, y'all. Good evening. My name is Bun. I'm the reentry coordinator for the Asian Prison Support Committee. I just wanted to speak about my journey of coming home after 24 years of imprisonment. But before I tell you my journey, I wanted to tell you what a normal journey is coming home after serving long sentence. For folks that are citizen, that does not have to face ICE detention, when you come home, it's a joyful time. You know, you call your family. Your family's at the gate waiting for you. Your community members waiting for you. You go through the last process that you'll ever go through in a prison, and you're welcome at the gate by your loved ones, by your family, by your community member. And that's how everybody that have served their time should be welcomed by their loved one. But for folks like myself and the APSC4, we have another journey. We're not let out in the front gate, but we're snuck away in the back of the prisons. For myself, I was paroled during the COVID epidemic. I was supposed to be detained by ICE, but for reasons that we did not know, they did not come. And they did not tell me that they weren't coming. I was still under the impression that I was to be detained. APSC, Interfaith, and community members were in the back gates of San Quentin waiting to protest my detention. And nobody told them that I wasn't being detained. I was sick with COVID, and they didn't care. I was let out by myself, sick. And after 24 years, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to make a phone call. They gave me a debit card that I did not know how to use. Luckily for me, I remember how to dial 0 on a payphone and was attempting to call Anoop. Which I wasn't successful, but Anoop figured it out that there's only one person calling me, Collect, this early in the morning, and found out that I was at the bus station. Folks rushed over to try to pick me up at the bus station, but I was on the bus going to the only place I knew close to San Quentin was San Francisco. I was hallucinating. I had a temperature and did not know what bus to take, what bus I'm going on, where I'm going to be dropped off. I was fortunate to have a person that was on the bus that called Anoop for me and let him know that I was on a bus going to San Francisco. All I knew was to get off at the end of the line. By the time that I was, by the time I made it to San Francisco, I was so sick that I fainted. I fainted right on the bus stop. And was blessed again when I woke up for a moment to have somebody call Anoop for me again to let him know that I'm here in San Francisco. While I fainted and slept on a bus stop, the community went around San Francisco calling my name, looking for me in different places where I was not at, and just trying to guess or whatever information they could get. During that time of COVID, it was very dangerous. We didn't know folks were passing away. APSC, Interfaith, and the community were so brave to come and pick me up to make sure I was okay. They were so brave that the only container they had to protect me, protect them from me, from COVID, was the banners that they have, and they covered the van up, and that was their only protection. And I tell you this, my story is because our community that are being detained, we, after decades behind bar, we don't see happiness. We don't see families getting together. We don't see reunification with our family. We see it like what Key said, a double punishment. We see a detention center, or we're like, for myself, kicked out, sick and alone, not knowing what to do. And these are the reason why we need to stop this inhumane practice. And for myself, since I've been home, I've been working with our community. As of right now, I'm a reentry coordinator with Asian Prison Support Committee, helping folks come home, making sure that they don't go through what I've been through. I also work for Ceres, part of New Light, and helping folks that are been deported. Helping folks that are suffering still while deported away from their family. And I'm also a youth mentor at Ceres, helping our youth understand what their elders are going through, what their parents are going through, and what they're going through themselves. Thank y'all for listening to my story, and please support us, support APSC4, and support our community members are going through this alone. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Good evening, and thank you all for coming. Just like Bun shared, you know, it's in Bun and Key. The difference between, you know, our paroling from people that are U.S. citizens are different. And for us, you know, for me, unlike Bun wasn't picked up. I was picked up by ICE. So after 15 years, I was finally granted parole in 2019. But what greeted me on my freedom day, that's supposed to be the happiest day for me, was a GO officer with shackles and handcuffs. You know, that was the morning of my parole date. And it just started, you know, that was the start of a long journey in detention, you know. And then, you know, me and many others suffer these the detention differently. For me, I was on the road for 72 hours from when I left Chowchilla. You know, I was dropped off from one facility to the next. The road trip at that time, I didn't mind. But what I did mind was being in a van full of men. You know, Bun talked about double punishment, right? For me, it was like triple punishment and more. I was in a van full of men, and that was something I did not prepare for. And as a survivor, it triggered me just being around them. And so I had to put all the different coping skills that I learned to use. And because of that, I was able to manage my anger when I felt enraged, threatened, and disrespected. Because I tell myself, okay, what would I do when I'm outside these walls and outside this van and outside of detention? Because that's the person who I'm going to be today. You know, what was it like in detention? It was horrible. But the best way I could describe it was it was a cliffhanger moment. You will just never know what to expect. I knew when I set foot in that place that it was going to be a long journey, right? And it was like a premonition when I was in that row for 72 hours. But what kept me hopeful was that I know that as a survivor, I learned how to be resilient. That I'm strong, I'm loved, and I know this time I'm not alone in this fight. So in those moments inside detention, when I'm told to do something that I'm against, and it's against everything that I believe, I find the strength and the voice within myself to speak up. Because if I don't, then who would speak up for me? If I don't, then how would I be an example to others when I tell them, no, you have to stand up for yourself, and then I can't? So no means no. And I will not be your victim, whoever it may be that forces me to do something against my will. So no matter how many times my deportation officer asked me to sign those papers to self-deport to make their job easier, I didn't allow that intimidation to trick me into signing my life away. Because I know I have a family, I have my community alongside me, that I know I'm not going to be suffering and be in this fight alone. But unfortunately, not a lot of people have that. They don't have that hope and they don't have that help. So the little time that I spent there with them, when GO officers were rude and mean and telling us that we don't have a place here in the United States, I always tell them no. Maybe some of them just didn't get caught. But you have a family waiting out there, so we're not gonna let them just tell us what to do. You have a family to think of, and that's what we're going to do. So in retaliation, when we have a medical emergency, what do? They tell us to put a copay and wait. The living conditions there was either freezing or extremely hot. The food, the place, the hygiene, everything else was not pleasant in detention. I can talk forever about what is wrong with that place. But in summary, 15 years in prison was tolerable to me. But that 11 months in detention, that was cruel. So that was in detention, right? Just like Bun, he came home with COVID. Because of COVID, I was able to go home because of my medical condition. So I was released in April of 2020, and I was under the intensive supervision appearance program. It's an alternative to detention. In short, I have an ankle monitor. And what does that look like? 2 to 3 times in a month or in a week, I get a phone call, I get a home check-in, I get an ICE check-in. Numerous times during the week, I get called, they ping me, they buzz me, my ankle monitor talks to me. So it's a consistent harassment for me. My coworkers would tell me, because I would always tell them, I said, look, I got to wait for this call. I got to do this. I got to do that. In 1 week, Maria, I said, yeah, that's how they harassed me. And that's another punishment outside of detention. It's just out here. But now more people are able to see it. So imagine how many more of our sisters and brothers are suffering through that. You know, I've been on the monitor for 3 years and requested so many times because of medical condition. Now, the mental and emotional and physical toll that it takes on me and my body, I can handle it, you know. But when I see my family and especially my mom, when it kept buzzing the whole night, she said, does that mean that ICE is going to come and get you? That's the hardest part of it. How do I contain myself and, you know, put up that brave face for my family when deep inside I can't, you know, I can only do so much, but that I can't spare that. I can't spare them from it, you know? You know, being out in public, we're judged. For those that have ankle monitors, we're judged consistently. Sometimes they don't have to speak, and that's what I go through. There's a mom. There was a little girl in Target, and she was smiling at me, and she pointed out to my ankle monitor, and her mom, you know, saw the ankle monitor, grabbed her so hard to get her as far away from me. She didn't have to do that, but she did. She didn't have to say, but she did. Just by doing that, said it all. And sometimes that's the hardest part. And when your family's around, my family's around, that's the most heartbreaking. In August last year, I had a stroke. You know, when I mentioned that I've been telling my ICE officers, because I've been on the program so long, that I've sent multiple requests to take it off because of a medical condition, they denied me so many times, just different excuses, depending on what day it is. On last August, I had a stroke, you know, and the doctors told me that they need to get it off because they need to run the test before I have another episode. I told them, you better not take it off until I hear from my lawyer, until I hear from my specialist. The irony is that these doctors are trying to save my life, but removing that monitor, you would jeopardize my life because they're going to arrest me and detain me if you took it off without their permission. So when I said double punishment, it's triple punishment, four punishment, five times. For us, for me, for Bun, for Key, for PJ. I'm an immigrant, I'm a survivor. We're at risk for deportation, but we all do what we love best. You know, welcoming our people and offering them support in their reentry. I'm in recovery right now, but I still do my work. And I always get my coworkers always tell me, Maria, you better take it easy. But sometimes help can't wait because maybe that 30 seconds is all they need to prevent something from happening in their lives, right? So today I say all this and share all this because I'm not the only one who has an ankle monitor and whose family is being harassed and threatened every day losing because the fear of losing their husband or their family. You know, I'm here today to ask for your support, to ask Governor Newsom to pardon APSC 4 and so that we can stay with our family and let this be the trail, you know, for us making the way for other community members to be with their families.
So I want to... Thank you.
was the Red Lily Quintet here on CKUT from their tribute to Mahalia Jackson. We heard the song Resilience. They say the album embodies the sentiment of a joyful past, a determined present, and a resilient future. We've been listening to stories from the APSC 4, so four staff members with the Asian Prisoner Support Committee who are all facing deportation. Earlier in the show, we heard from Ki, Bun, Maria, and next here on the Prison Radio Show on CKUT, we will hear from PJ. We will hear about his journey of incarceration and release.
So I wanted to say that, or kind of echo what Maria said earlier about, you know, like we're not alone, right? So I want to share my story a little bit, and I try to summarize it and try to be as short as possible. But, you know, when I was saying I'm not, when she said, like, we're not alone, right? And my story isn't unique, you know, like I'm not the only person who lived this experience, right? Like a lot of Southeast Asian community who are refugees who immigrated to this country suffers similar hardship, if not worse, right? And so my story is that I came to this country when I was 5. You know, my family escaped from the Khmer Rouge, surviving genocide. And I came here to the United States hoping to find a new beginning, you know, and we resettled, you know, in a community that was very impoverished, very, a lot of violence. You know, I live in Stockton, I grew up in Stockton during a time that there's a lot of racism, a lot of bias. So I came to the country not really feeling wanted, right? I was young, so I didn't really understand what was happening, you know, being spit on and being told, you know, like, go back to your country. Like, that didn't really, that was confusing to me. You know, I didn't understand why people hate me. You know, what did I do to offend somebody? And I just really didn't know and understand the culture or the dynamic, you know? And for me at that point, I internalized like that stuff. And then, and to a point, like people was doing this to a point where, you know, that it hit home really hard, right? Like example is that when I say home hard is that example is, you know, when I was 9, you know, I was on school ground and a guy named Patrick Purdy came to my school with an AK-47 and start opening fire, you know, to a school ground, wounding, killing my cousin and wounding my neighbors and teachers and students, you know, fellow students. And this is like an action, you know, like was perpetrated against Southeast Asian community members, right? And you know, like thinking back, you know, like it was a big message for me, like you know, you don't belong here. And to a point where, you know, someone tried to kill me, right? So, you know, from that moment on, it changed my life. You know, I never thought that my environment was safe after that. You know, school was the one place I used to go to, despite my neighborhood, despite the gangs, despite all the violence and shooting and drugs and everything that's happening. School was a place that I thought that was safe. You know, like I can go play tetherball and, you know, be with my classroom and learn something. And even though I didn't feel like I was accepted in the group and stuff because of the language barriers, cultural differences, I still felt like it's a place I could grow, right? And after that, you know, like it just died, you know, my whole sense of safety died. And I think the theme of my life has always been that way, like trying to find safety, trying to find acceptance, right? And to a point, you know, I adapted to my environment, you know, by joining gangs to find the safety, to find a community. And that led me to a life of crime, led me to some dark places, you know, and at 14, I became one of the youngest juvenile lifer in the system, right? I was actually 15, but committed a crime when I was 14, and I was a juvenile lifer. You know, I think I was the youngest in the system at the time, and I pretty much grew up in prison. You know, like Ki, Bun, and Maria. And I went through the process of juvenile hall, CYA, interstate prison. And fortunately for me, is that I was around a lot of elders who gave me an opportunity to change. Right, and I think I had some sense. You know, being with them and being that I was so tired of, you know, the politics. I was so tired of the gangs, of hurting people, right? I was lucky, you know, I was part of a program that allowed me to see these things when I was at a younger age. So I turned my life around and came home. I went to San Quentin, co-founded some programs. Like he became a counselor working with the youth. And I think through my journey, you know, I came home and I end up in ICE, right? And that's a common story. That's like the common Southeast Asian community story, right? Like, I mean, you look at the photos now, photo of my family. I came home, and that was my my mentor and my leaders. I'm gonna say, you know, one person I very admire, Sophie, was there for me, and a lot of community members was there for me. But you know, welcoming my family, and that was a very special moment for me. You know, I get to be with my family after all those years. But you know, like Maria, you know, I'm always reminded that I'm not free, right? Like there's a change, a hidden change that just keeps you. And at any moment, you know, I could be separated from my family and be deported from them. So every moment is always special for me with my family, right? And at the same time, you know, I think I try to move forward as best I could. I try to live my life in a way that makes sense, right? Because I caused harm through my journey. Now, I was harmed, but I've also caused harm, and I wanted to give back. And so now you see me, you know, I do a lot of stuff in the community. I still go back to the prison and do program and teach classes. But I also, you know, work heavily in the community through my work at APSC, through my work with Siri, you know, connecting with my elders, who are also survivors of genocide, and learning from them and being part of the community that that I didn't get a chance to be growing up, right? So all to say, as I'm keeping it shorter, that my story isn't unique, and we need your help. You know, like in order for us to stay home, we need your help as we're giving back to our community. Because I love my work, I love my family, I want to stay here, I want to continue what I'm doing, and I can't do it without you. You know, and I learned that through my journey that without community, you know, we can't accomplish anything. You know, so this is not by myself. So I need the community to join me as we do this together. So thank you for joining us. At this point, I'm gonna transition and pass it to Leanne.
Thank you so much, PJ. And thank you to Key, Bun, Maria, and PJ for taking the time, being vulnerable and really sharing your stories. I wanna pause here, like for folks to like shower them with love in the chat, please send them all the love that you have for them. Just a real resilience and like being vulnerable. It's super powerful to see what we can do as a community when we do come together. And that's why we're here today. We're going to talk about what we can do. California Governor Newsom has the power to pardon our beloved community members, APSC, and protect them from deportation. We know that deportation only continues the cycle of harm and trauma in our communities, and Newsom can stop end this cycle with a simple pardon.
You're listening to
CKUT
90.3 FM.
Get out!
me. I need help. I'm unraveling. I'm afraid. Forgive me. Forgive myself. Forgive them, they say.
Forgive them, they say. Forgive them, they say. Forgive them, they say.
Forgive those that have hurt you. Don't hang on to the past, they say. You will only hurt yourself. I was entered too young. The past has birthed the bricks that build my bones. The past divided all my cells into this muscle I flex. Into this muscle I flex. Into this skin that I've stretched. The past is the house of these breaths. The past is the house of these breaths. I was entered too young. I do not forgive and forget. I protect and prevent. I protect and prevent.
I protect and prevent. I protect and prevent.
Make them each shame and repent. I was only too young.
That was Tanya Tagak here on CKUT with the song I Forgive Me. She dedicates this album, new release called Tongues, to the living Indigenous populations working through trauma and generational trauma. She says, we are here, we were always here, and we will always be here. Thank you to everyone putting in the hard work to reclaim languages, cultural practice, and weave our own belief systems with new eyes into our children's lives. We have been listening here on the Prisoner Radio Show, to members from the Asian Prisoner Support Committee, or APSC4, who are asking for a pardon from State of California Governor Gavin Newsom. For more information about the campaign, you're welcome to visit their website and sign the petition, write a letter. The main theme of today's show was double punishment and how it's used against non-citizens who are already being punished by the criminal justice system. The policy creates, you know, different tiers in the justice system in which immigrants face, the risk of deportation. So their consequences are doubled, tripled, quadrupled, and so on. The panel discussion that we have been listening to was organized by 18 Million Rising, and it took place over Zoom. And there was a brief question and answer period. Someone asked a question about trauma and working through trauma, and I'd like to share with you the answers provided by APSC for members, where they talk a little bit more about the work that they do in prisons.
There's so much trauma for those who have been incarcerated, and it continues post-incarceration. Oftentimes, these trauma are not addressed due to the stigma of mental health. And I was wondering if APSC has a plan in place or a goal to have these trauma addressed in some way, shape, or form. For the folks that are inside San Quentin, the men, we do have the Roots program where we do address intergenerational trauma, mental health, gender identity, and so much more. And then I think earlier in the conversation, we do have a in-prison program through the Lit group where we correspond with folks that's inside and to talk about that. When folks come home, they can actually tap in with APSC, and we have a lot of connections to other orgs, like such as Ceres here in Oakland, where there are therapists that they could access to and talk about that. And well, I think one of the biggest ways we could definitely have it is like even like me, PJ, Bun, and Rhea, we use our lived experience to help address a lot of these traumas.
And Key, I can also add to that.
Sure. Go ahead, Maria.
For the women that are currently incarcerated right now, the avenue, like when we go inside prison, we give them our business cards and we're able to correspond with them through GTL. So when there's API folks and people that are coming home or have a hold or need support, we correspond through that. But then when they come home, like for APSC, the Community and Reentry Empowerment is a support group for the women where we address these issues. You know, if someone in our group is having or is being triggered and from trauma, you know, being out here now, we have a space for it. We talk about it, and we just graduated our second cohort, and it doesn't have to stop. Like the support that they receive doesn't stop because the program's ended. It's a continuing support system for them. So we do have some support groups, like we do have some in place, but it doesn't stop us from going for creating more programs for our community.
Yeah, I want to add to that, you know, prior to COVID and even during COVID, part of the COVID process when we were in COVID, I mean, APSC was running our monthly support group. And so folks who formerly incarcerated come together and talk about their experiences in post-incarceration, right? Some of the journey and what they're facing, and oftentimes share resources, update each other on, you know, events and stuff like that. And so those are moments, you know, like that, that's a thing about prison, right? Like, especially you're in an environment of like San Quentin, when you do a lot of programming, you know, like being in the program is almost like the way of being supported, you know, through the Roots, you know, like, for example, you know, you can always check in with people, you know, you can always share what you're going through, whatever hardship comes up, you can talk to each other, right, and get the support you need. When you come home, right, that same stuff isn't there anymore, right? So, you know, the support group was established for the opportunity. And now, I mean, since COVID kind of complicated things a little more, you know, we haven't done it since, but we'll speak for reentry, but I think that could be something we could explore later down the line.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you to everyone who stuck around. And thank you, of course, to APSC4 for being here, for sharing their stories, being vulnerable with us. And thank you to everyone who sent letters and signed a petition. Please feel free to share with your network. And let's make sure that APSC4 stays free.
You have been listening to the Prison Radio Show on SKUT 90.3 FM, where we have been listening to APSC4 members about their present campaign to demand a pardon. Thank you for tuning in. You can check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. Parts of our show are also available through various podcasting apps. Our schedule has changed. We now are on the air every other Tuesday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. This means you can catch us next on Tuesday, April 23rd from 6 to 7 p.m. And we'll be continuing our series on Palestinian prisoners. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are especially encouraged to participate. Folks can also call us at 438-858-6116. Again, it's 438-858-6116. You can call that number collect if you are dialing from within local 438 or 514 area codes. Thanks to the folks at Fed Phone Line for gifting us the phone number. People in prison can also write to us by mail. You can write to us at the Prison Radio Show or simply write PRS on the envelope, care of CQUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. Thank you for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM. My name is Candace, and I've been your host for today. Please stay tuned.
What's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. I'm your host for the evening, Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Sufi woman, bring me roomy till I fall asleep up on your bosom. You're a lion, but you walk around so unassuming. You go shine your eyes, you don't put it on me. Put a liquor spell on me. What thing you do to me? You no go walk on me. You go see. You go, night, night, night. You go, shake it in. You go see that goddess in La Bruja, in La Bruja. Debe die, she could die, my room, La Bruja, La Bruja. She debe die, she could die, my room, La Bruja.